Hello and welcome to this week's recording of the Wallingford and District Talking newspaper, bringing you the news from the Wallingford Herald for Wednesday the 3rd of June 2026, with a few additional items, a couple from the Henley Standard and from the Roundabout. Your readers this evening will be Jane and Kay. I'm your producer, David. The copier and recordist this week is Pete.
Hello, I'm Jane. My first article is on the front page of the Wallingford Herald, and it's entitled Children's Feet Left Bleeding at Splash Park. This article continues in the body of the paper on page 7. Several children were left injured with bleeding feet at a splash park during the heat wave. Parents insist the cause of the injury at Riverside Park and Pools in Wallingford was the floor underneath the water. But the pool's operator, Better, claims children would have been hurt themselves outside the pool from running around barefoot. Mum of three, Ellie Tennant, whose children all had cuts to their feet after their visit last Saturday, said, "Better must do better." Ms. Tennant from Wallingford suspects it may be the tiles or the grout at the bottom of the shallow area of the pool. "This needs to be looked at properly," the mum said. "We've been going for years and this has never happened before, but it recently reopened. When we were there between 3 p.m. and 5 p.m, there was another girl with very bad cuts and four other kids whose feet were bleeding. The pool was heaving. It was hot. Some of the kids could not swim, so they are all in the shallow end." Ms. Tennant spoke to staff at the pool after her children, aged 4, 7, and 9, had cuts. But she was left dissatisfied when one of the assistants did go in, but failed to put her head in the water and take a proper look. Later that week, the problem was brought to her attention once again when a parent posted on a Facebook community group about 9 other children being injured on another day while at the pool. "Obviously, hasn't sorted this out," she said. "This has probably been going on for a week. As soon as one child has a cut foot, the children could really come out, and it be looked at properly." A spokeswoman for the operator said 2 surveys were carried out of the pool floor and walls, but it did not find any issue such as debris, damage or loose tiles. "We've had 4,000 visits to the swimming pool since it reopened this year, and had only a handful of complaints regarding children with grazed feet. We believe these may have been incurred outside the pool, where children are running around barefoot on hot concrete or uneven ground. To help prevent this from happening, we would encourage all visitors to wear suitable footwear, such as sliders, while walking around the pool area." Wallingford Town Councillor Ros Lester said, "This is a shame for our local children and the many visitors that the heatwave has encouraged to play in the splash park. Hopefully the cause will be found and sorted very quickly. Until they find the cause, it seems sensible only to wear some kind of footwear, as the splash park is surrounded by grass and anything could be hidden there. We all want Wallingford to be considered as a safe place for all." And there's a picture of Ros Lester sitting on a bench in Castle Gardens.
Hello, I'm Kay, and this next item is also featured on the front page. New play park is officially opened. A new play park has officially opened in Wallingford, offering families a fresh space to enjoy and explore outdoors. The park in Winterbrook Meadows was unveiled by the Mayor of Wallingford, Nigel Hughes, during a ribbon-cutting ceremony attended by residents, families and members of the Barclay team. The park features a basketball court, a large climbing area, swings, slides and open spaces designed for children of different ages. Alan Deering, Sales Director of Barclay Homes, said Winterbrook Meadows is a growing community and creating a sustainable place is about much more than bricks and mortar. It is about delivering spaces where people can meet, children can play, and families can spend time together. The play park is part of Barclay's wider community plan for the Winterbrook Meadows development, which aims to blend new housing with shared public facilities. The opening follows the recent upgrade and reopening of Winterbrook Lane, which provides easier access between Winterbrook Meadows and the town centre of Wallingford. And we have a photo of the officials and with the mayor just about to cut the ribbon. It's obviously a lovely sunny day, so there are lots of children and parents around.
Thug attacked two ex-partners. A thug has been jailed after attacking two ex-partners. Dean Webb of King's Close Benson, near Wallingford, was sentenced at Oxford Crown Court on Tuesday, May the 26th. The 34-year-old pleaded guilty to causing actual bodily harm, criminal damage, and assault by beating. The first offence was committed against a woman in June 2024. The others were against a different victim on February the 12th this year. The court heard that in the first incident, Webb spat in the woman's face and jumped on top of her. He also tore at her top and she screamed. In the second incident, Webb damaged the woman's phone and attacked her. The court heard that Webb had been in breach of a previous suspended sentence and that he had previous convictions for domestic violence. Ben Chichester, mitigating, said, "This is a troubled young man. He turned to drink and drugs from an early age. He's had a very difficult life and he doesn't shy away from his previous convictions. He has a well-documented history of mental health issues. He's had time to reflect on his behaviour and his drive to make changes in his life. This is a turning point for him to make changes in his life, and I ask the court to give him one last chance." Judge Ian Pringle, KC, gave Webb a total sentence of 28 months in prison.
Another item from the front page. Bus firm boss, 65, dies after sudden illness. An Oxfordshire bus company boss has died after a sudden illness. Mike Ward, who set up the Going Forward Buses, CIC, in the south of Oxfordshire, died aged 65 at the Royal Berkshire Hospital in Reading. Mr. Ward had set up the company to provide a bus route between Goring, where he lived, and Wallingford when other bus operators refused to take over the route. Route 134, which went via Cleve and Stokes, commenced under Mr. Ward in January 2017 with an increased number of daily services. Two minibuses were purchased, drivers had been contracted, and the service had been registered with the traffic commissioners. Goring councillor Maggie Filipova Rivers said he will be deeply missed by the community to which he devolved so much time, energy, and commitment.
And the final article from the front page, again, all information in the body of the paper. Couple build garden office using shipping container. And there's two lovely photographs of the shipping container, one just of a blank wall and the other with doors and windows in. It looks very attractive. An old shipping container has been turned into a stunning garden office for £8,000. Abby and her husband Matthew Newton from Ibston near Wallingford have transformed a bright blue 20-foot shipping container into a stylish garden office and studio. As an extension to their 70s bungalow was out of budget, they came up with a quirky alternative that perfectly aligned with their tiny living obsession. Mrs. Newton said the couple had always had a fascination with tiny homes and had already converted a van into a camper van. She said, "We wanted to free up an extra bedroom in the house for a working space, but the cost of an extension wasn't something we could entertain. A DIY garden office seemed like the best way to capitalise on space at a more affordable cost." Mrs. Newton, a product photographer, and Mr. Newton, who works in the film industry, were fortunate enough to know someone who was selling a shipping container. The ground was muddy and the winter weather was miserable when it first arrived in December 2024. But now they are completing the finishing touches to their garden building. She said the container fitted in perfectly with the garden, and painting it black matched the black barn of our neighbours just behind it. It feels like it's blended in with the surrounding farm buildings and countryside so well. The first steps were to insulate it and board it up, which we hired someone local to do. Then it was about getting electricity to it, which we luckily had a friend who could help. Natural light was going to make or break the project, so they replaced the heavy container door with stylish black French doors from Leader Online. She said, we made sure to place the office right where the sun hits, and it's glorious when the sunset light floods in. It's a beautiful place to work and great for photography if I ever want to play with natural light. Plus the double patio doors let us take in the countryside views that made us buy this property. The space is now a multifunctional dream for the creative couple, also including DJ decks, a computer setup, and a photography studio. She added, the best thing about a renovation journey is being able to put your own stamp on all parts of your home and garden. Using a container as a starting point has allowed us to do that while being cheaper than buying a large garden office or going ahead with a loft conversion or extension.
Adults break play equipment at park. Grown adults are breaking park equipment by playing on them. Benson Parish Council said the play equipment at the village's parks are in need of costly repairs as a result. In a polite statement, the council asked grown-ups to not play in the children's area near Wallingford. A spokesman said, we would kindly like to remind everyone that the play equipment in our village parks is designed and built for children only. Unfortunately, we have recently experienced a number of costly repairs as a result of adults using the equipment. We understand that it can be tempting to join in the fun, but we respectfully ask adults to help us look after these facilities so they remain safe, enjoyable, and available for local children.
Drivers face four-week A34 slip road closure. Drivers face a lengthy closure at the A34 Lodge Hill Junction from today as work continues to create a new £36 million interchange. Oxfordshire County Council is working with contractors to create the new interchange for drivers at the junction north of Abingdon, and the project is expected to be completed by the end of the year. There has been a series of alterations to the road layout around the junction as a result of the work, and drivers are now being alerted to the latest development. From today, Wednesday, June the 3rd, the northbound on-slip to the A34 will be closed for about 4 weeks. Abingdon North County Councillor Nathan Lay has alerted drivers to the closure. He said, advance warning that the current A34 Lodge Hill on-slip at Abingdon will be fully closed from Wednesday for 4 weeks. This is unavoidable in order to finish off the new northern roundabout. The junction at Lodge Hill at present only has north-facing slip roads, but the upgrade will add new south-facing slip roads, as well as making cycling and walking easier and safer in the area. Adding the south-facing slip roads will reduce traffic in the town centre, as some drivers will no longer have to travel through it to access the A34 southbound at the Marcham interchange. Highway bosses say stage one and stage two of the work has now been completed, with stage three about to get underway. The entire project is expected to be completed later this year. A county council spokesman said, from June the 3rd, the northbound on-slip to the A34 will be closed for a period of approximately 4 weeks. The closure will be in place 24 hours a day, 7 days a week during this period. This closure will facilitate the construction and tie-in of the existing slip road to the new north roundabout. A diversion route will be in place via the A4183 Oxford Road. Vehicles wishing to travel northbound on the A34 will need to use the Hinksey Hill interchange. A similar closure for the southbound off slip will follow early in July. Further details of this will be communicated closer to the time. The interchange scheme near Abingdon is mainly funded by a £17 million plus grant from Homes England's Brownfield Infrastructure and Land, BIL, fund, with additional funding from developer contributions and the Housing Growth Deal. In July last year, it emerged that the budget for the work had risen to £36.09 million to address rising costs. For years, local councillors and Leila Milan, Liberal Democrat MP for Oxford West and Abingdon, pressed the government for the funding to allow the junction scheme to go ahead.
Roundabout could help cut congestion. A new roundabout would ease traffic queues for shoppers heading to Didcot's Orchard Centre, according to councillors. Traffic lights in Hitchcock Way at the entrance to the Sainsbury's car park were out of action in May after they were struck by a vehicle. Some drivers said traffic flowed more freely while the traffic lights were out of action. The traffic lights were fixed and working again by the end of last week, but councillors have now called for a review and believe a roundabout or alternative measures could keep the traffic flowing better than when the lights are in use. Moki Khan, District Councillor for Didcot South, said he is urging County Council Highways officers to consider the possibility of a roundabout at the busy junction. The former town mayor said, "The lights are back on now. They were fixed last week, but I think the council still needs to look at the option of having a roundabout. This is a real pinch point which gets blocked up at peak times. Drivers queue to get into Sainsbury's car park, and it's difficult for other traffic to get past. The more people that support the idea of a roundabout, the more chance it has of going ahead." Didcot West County Councillor Ian Snowden has also been monitoring traffic flow when the lights were out of action. Earlier this month, he stated, "Many of you have been in touch regarding the traffic lights at the entrance and exit to the Orchard Centre, which have now been out of action for over a week. I've been chasing highways officers for an update on both the cause of the issue and the repair timescales. I've now been informed that the vehicle collision caused significant damage to the signal controller, signal pole and incoming main supply, all of which now need replacing. Highway officers have advised that they are currently carrying out the necessary works." Mr. Snowden said many people have commented that traffic flow improved while the lights were out of action. He added, "I've taken these comments on board and have written to highways officers highlighting the feedback from residents about the reduction in congestion at this junction. I will be raising possible alternatives, including whether some form of roundabout layout or pedestrian crossing arrangement could work better here in the longer term. Of course, safety must remain the top priority, but it is clear from the volume of comments received that many people feel the current traffic lights may actually be contributing to congestion rather than helping traffic flow." A spokesman for the County Council said, "Leaving the traffic signals turned off would be a safety concern and would increase the chances of significant congestion at peak periods there and elsewhere on the road network."
Plan to dig trenches in road for 8 kilometre cable passed. A major plan to dig trenches down the middle of Oxfordshire B roads to connect a solar farm with a city substation have been approved despite, in inverted commas, organised crime and disruption fears. A proposal for the installation of an underground high-voltage cable to support Burcott Farm Solar Farm between Abingdon and Beaconsfield with Cowley local substation was approved at Oxford City Council Planning Committee on Tuesday, May the 26th. digging trenches down the middle of the road is permitted development for water or electricity companies, but since this is an engineering work for a new solar farm, planning permission is required, according to council officers. The proposal is also being assessed by South Oxfordshire District Council, which previously rejected the solar farm plan, only for it to win approval through a government appeal. The farm could power around 13,000 homes. The cable would run under Watlington Road and the B4015. Sections would also be below Fields and Bolden Brook. It will require the excavation of a trench approximately 8.39 kilometres long, 0.97 metres wide, and between 1.08 and 1.38 metres deep. The route crosses two South Oxfordshire National Character Landscape areas, the Greenbelt and flood areas numbers 2 and 3, sorry, flood zone areas number 2 and 3. A number of concerns were raised during the application process. A committee from Notcotts Garden Centre said, "We are concerned that the impact of this application and the need for extensive and lengthy roadworks in the immediate vicinity of our Notcotts Garden Centre at Newnham Courtney will be seriously disruptive to our trade. We would therefore ask that route solutions which avoid this to be examined as the economic effect on businesses in the locality will be severe in a location where the road network is already under strain." Thames Valley Police also recognised fears about the risk of crime, saying had not been adequately addressed in plans stating high voltage cable is a very high value target for organised crime, and solar farms across the country are experiencing a significant increase in the theft of cable and other materials during the construction phase of the development. And there's a small photograph showing parts of a solar array.
We thought we would include this next item, but unfortunately it is a film and it's appearing at the Corn Exchange this evening, which is Wednesday. So anyway, nuclear injustice documentary. Our Planet, the People, My Blood, directed by Daniel Everett Locke, tells the story of nuclear injustice through the experiences of British nuclear test veterans and global communities affected by nuclear weapons testing. It follows Alan Owen, a descendant of an atomic soldier, in his fight for recognition and compensation for those impacted by the tests. Mr. Everett Locke said, "9 years ago, I watched a short film about nuclear test veterans and couldn't believe that no one was talking about it. I set out to make a documentary that offered a deeply human account of the communities forgotten by the governments that harmed them." The documentary was screened to a cross-party group of MPs earlier this year as part of a campaign to declassify medical records of British nuclear test veterans. Filmed over 3 years, the project covers 150,000 kilometres across three continents and includes more than 50 testimonies. Contributors include the indigenous Marshall Islanders, the Maralinga Charachuta of Australia, the Spokane Nation of the United States, and survivors of Hiroshima and Nagasaki. Mr. Owen said, "This documentary shows the years of denial from one of the oldest establishments in the UK and across the world. The affected communities now have a voice through this incredible piece of work. My family's story is just one of thousands which has been suppressed. It can now be heard."
Henley MP calls for dementia campaign. Freddie Van Merlo, MP, is calling for a new national dementia risk reduction campaign. The MP for Henley and Tame has written to the Minister for Public Health and Prevention, urging the government to launch a campaign backed by recent recommendations from Alzheimer's Research UK. Mr. Van Merlo said, "Too many people are unaware that there are practical steps we can take to protect our brain health and reduce the risk of dementia. With almost 1 million people in the UK living with dementia, we need a stronger national focus on prevention and awareness. A government-led campaign delivered through the NHS would give people clear, practical information about brain health while supporting wider efforts to prevent ill health and reduce pressure on health services." He described dementia as one of the greatest public health challenges facing the UK, noting that almost 1 million people are currently living with the condition. Mr. Van Merlo pointed to evidence suggesting that up to 45% of dementia cases globally could potentially be prevented or delayed by addressing 14 modifiable risk factors, particularly during midlife. His call follows the launch of Alzheimer's Research's report, Closing the Dementia Awareness Gap, Why the UK Needs a National Dementia Risk Reduction Campaign. And there's a small photograph of Freddie with one of his MP colleagues.
Rare 17th century Bible with ornate cover at auction. A rare 17th century Bible has gone up for auction. The King James Version of the Holy Bible of 1648, with Charles II embroidered raised work bindings, is on the market. The Bible is up for auction by Pedestal in Henley, with bids accepted until Thursday the 4th. It is expected to fetch up to £5,000. The embroidery with silk, silver threads, and spangles, the front cover probably depicting religious idols, and the spine has floral raised work with silver and leather clasps. The charming Bible has multiple inscriptions of various names believed to be the previous owners. Inscription like Sarah Marlowe, 1763, could be Sarah Kent, 1725 to 1791, who married the Reverend Michael Marlowe Sr., 1711 to 1795, an Anglican church, a clergyman, in 1750. In 1796, Marlowe married Mary Jane Clare, 1773 to 1848, the daughter of the Reverend Dr. Thomas Clare of Rugby, Warwickshire. George Thomas Clare was therefore the nephew by marriage to the Reverend Dr. Michael Marlowe. Not much is known about the ornate cover made for the Bible, but covers were made for books from the 16th century to the 17th century, and they were frequently worked by skilled amateur embroiderers. The future Elizabeth I embroidered bindings for a series of books given to her father, King Henry VIII, and his sixth wife, Catherine Parr, as New Year gifts. Spokesman for the auction said, "The Bible has been in the possession of the current owner for many years, and it is intriguing to think who will treasure it next as it heads towards its 400th birthday."
Councillors warn over health body. South Oxfordshire District Council declared its support for an independent health body and called for a new approach to address social inequality. The council passed a motion during its annual meeting on May the 14th to defend the independence of Health Watch, an organisation that represents patient voices in health and social care. It also agreed to ask its cabinet to consider adopting the socio-economic duty in its decision-making process. Health Watch could be abolished under the government's proposed NHS 10-year health plan, which would transfer its functions to integrated care boards and local authorities. Councillors warned this move could weaken patient representation and reduce public influence over health services. Georgina Heritage, who proposed the motion, said, "Health Watch is a nationally recognised independent statutory body to represent patients. Removing it weakens the ability of ordinary people to influence decisions affecting their health and well-being, particularly those least able to advocate for themselves. The Council agreed to write to the Secretary of State for Health and Social Care to outline its concerns and to support any national campaign aiming to protect Health Watch. It will also write to MPs and communicate its position to relevant partners and networks. In a related decision, councillors backed a motion by Councillor David Ruain to ask Cabinet to consider adopting the socio-economic duty in strategic decision-making. The Council also considers the impact, the Council already considers the impact of its policies on people facing disadvantage, but this step will ensure even greater focus on fairness and opportunity. Councillor Ruain, who represents Didcot North East, said, "Socio-economic disadvantage can shape every aspect of a person's life, from their health and education to their employment opportunities. While Oxfordshire is ranked among the least deprived counties in the country, there are still communities across the district facing significant challenges that we must not ignore if we are serious about improving life chances for all residents." He said council decisions have the power either to reduce or to deepen inequality.
Princess Diana's cultural icon up for sale at auction. The car that Princess Diana stepped out of while wearing her iconic revenge dress is being auctioned in Abingdon. The late royal emerged from the Jaguar XJ40 wearing a black off-the-shoulder Christina Strombolian gown in 1994, days after then Prince Charles admitted he had been unfaithful. The daring dress instantly made headlines around the world, with many interpreting that it was worn in revenge for Charles' affair. The 4-litre Jag is now being auctioned off by the market in Abingdon. And the auctioneer said it is being listed without a guide price because they really don't know how to put a price on the car that was at the centre of such an iconic cultural moment in time. The car is said to be in good condition with 45,000 miles on the clock, a few minor scuffs on the wheel, and a number of small shallow dinks. Excuse me. There are three filled-in holes in the roof just above the centre of the windscreen, which were where a bracket for mounting the Royal Standard was fitted. With the Royal Fleet as the car's one and only former keeper, the vendor bought the car in February 1997, just 6 months before Diana's tragic death in Paris. He kept the car warm and dry in a heated garage ever since, adding very few miles, proven by the fact that the mileage in 2006 was 38,000.
Didcot Town Centre retail units to go for auction. Shops are set to go under the hammer in an upcoming auction. Seven properties in Didcot Town Centre will be sold individually at the Acutis auction on June the 11th at 1 p.m. Guide prices for the shops in Broadway, Market Place and Station Road range from £150,000 to £330,000, with the properties generating annual retail income of between £15,000 and £30,000. John Mittab of Acutis said, "Retail opportunities of this scale, located in an affluent London commuter town, rarely come to auction. This is an ideal opportunity for investors looking to diversify their portfolio with the possibility of active asset management. The units form an uninterrupted retail parade on the corner of Broadway and Market Place."
E-bike rider hospitalised. An e-bike rider has been left in hospital with serious injuries after a crash involving a car in Didcot. The collision took place on Marjoram Way at the turning into Sage Drive in Didcot on Saturday, May the 23rd, just before 8:10 p.m. A man in his 30s was riding an e-bike at the turning when he was involved in a crash with a white Nissan Juke car. The e-bike rider suffered a serious head injury and remains in hospital, Thames Valley Police said. The driver of the Nissan was not injured in the collision, and police say no arrests have been made. Thames Valley Police is now appealing for witnesses to the serious injury collision.
Hundreds of jobs at risk at Morrisons stores. Morrisons could close up to 100 stores in the coming months, putting hundreds of jobs at risk. The supermarket said the affected Morrisons Daily branches had been loss-making for some time. Jobs are at a risk at stores across Oxfordshire, including two in Oxford and Bicester, and one each in Banbury, Carterton, Didcot, Farringdon and Tame. Morrisons, which runs around 1,700 daily convenience stores, took them on as part of the £190 million rescue of McColl's in 2022. The move follows last year's decision to shut 52 cafes and 17 convenience stores. The grocer said the store's performance had been squeezed in recent years by rising costs it links to government policies, including increasing the national living wage and employer national insurance contributions. A Morrison spokesperson told the Retail Gazette it was proposing the tough but necessary decision to close a loss-making stores with a staff consultation due to begin shortly. The retailer has not yet revealed which sites are earmarked for closure or exactly how many roles are at risk, but it is thought that hundreds of staff could be affected. While the company said it would try to find alternative routes for the roles for those impacted by the proposed cuts, it insisted it still has a robust expansion plan for 2026.
Family-run firm celebrates 100 years. Family-run Oxford-based haulage firm is marking its 100th anniversary. John Werrell and Son of Wootton near Abingdon traces its origins back to 1926 when John Werrell entered the haulage trade alongside his son Frank, both working as Foden drivers. The business quickly established itself, but like many operators of the time, faced early challenges. By 1929, the company had survived the general strike and invested in a new six-wheeled Foden vehicle named the Pride of Oxford, with the headboard including the slogan, "We can carry it," or one word, which is still used today. However, the introduction of the Salter Report brought significant pressures to steam wagon operators, with higher costs, reduced carrying capacity, and tighter operating restrictions. Licensing changes also saw annual fees rise sharply, creating further strain. Despite these setbacks, the business endured and grew. By 1955, it was firmly established, with the third generation, David Werrell, joining the company from the ground up as a driver. A year later, in 1956, the firm became a limited company led by John, Frank, and David Werrell. And we have a sepia photo of one of their vehicles, and it says John Werrell and Son Roadstone Ashes, and there's even a man in the back with a great big rock by the looks of it, and a phone number for Boars Hill. Can you remember when they were just three digits?
Last chance to see historical figures, Scarecrow Trail. Visitors are being urged to catch the final days of the East Hagbourne Village Scarecrow Trail, with dozens of imaginative creations on show until Sunday the 8th of June. Now in its 21st year, the popular community event features 36 scarecrows placed throughout the Oxfordshire village, raising money for good causes while attracting families and visitors of all ages. This year's theme, Historical Figures, has inspired a wide range of entries from Emmeline Pankhurst and Horatio Nelson to Sir David Attenborough and Henry VIII. Organisers have also included humorous twists such as Strawbert Einstein and Roger Bannistraw. Trail maps, priced at £1, are available from the East Hagbourne Community Shop and the Fleur-de-Lis Pub. Visitors can vote for their favourite creation. As part of the final weekend, teas will be served in the village church on Sunday, June the 7th, from 2:30 p.m. to 4:30 p.m, organised by the Hagbourne Action Group. All proceeds from the event will be shared between Oxfordshire Wildlife Rescue and Water Aid. A spokesman for the event said, "It's all being done to raise money for good causes, with all proceeds being shared equally between our fabulous local charity, Oxfordshire Wildlife Rescue, and Water Aid. This is a great outdoor event suitable for all ages." And there's a lovely photograph of one of the scarecrows, who's named as Beatrix Potter, sitting in a beautiful English country garden, and at her feet she's got a book of, and I don't know which one it is, one of her books anyway, and a nice table in front of with some flowers and a teapot and a cup of tea.
Rediscovering Little Poland 80 years later in the heart of rural Checkenden. The Friends of Checkenden, Nettlebed and Kingwood Common camps hosted a celebration at the Black Horse Pub to commemorate the arrival of the soldiers in 1946 to the village military camp after being exiled from communist-occupied Poland. They had fought under the command of General Bernard Montgomery during the Second World War. Graham Drucker, 69, from the Isle of Wight, is a historian and author who organised the event. Mr. Drucker began researching the military camp in Checkenden after being approached by two former colleagues last year. Sir Beag Neef and Barbara Kapolwicz, both 70, who were born in the camp to Polish refugees in the 50s. The couple now live in Cambridgeshire. Mr. Drucker said, "I found out very quickly there was next to no information about this. It was a mysterious former military camp in the woods. It's folklore for the villagers in surrounding areas. Last year, when I first started asking questions, they said they remembered a camp a long time ago, but no one knew anything else about it. So that really pushed me to try and make sure the legacy and memory of those families is never forgotten. Many of the 228,000 Polish troops in the British Army were displaced after the war and offered a home in the UK under the Polish Resettlement Act of 1947. These families were housed in former military Nissen huts, invented by Major Peter Nissen. Most of the buildings have been dismantled or become derelict, but some still survive at the former camp. Mr. Drucker is in the process of making a roll of honour for the Polish families who settled in the camp. He has named about 500 families so far, about 2,000 individuals. He also plans for a plaque to be unveiled at the Black Horse Pub in Checkenden in July and to launch a preservation project for a currently derelict Nissen hut that was a chapel for the camp to turn it into a museum or heritage site. Mr. Drucker said, "I am so inspired hearing the stories of the efforts and endurance that these Polish soldiers and their families experienced. Some of the children were born in Poland and forcefully taken out, or in Siberia, and they had to endure starvation or freezing cold weather. So trekking across the Himalayas or through the desert in the Middle East to settling in the countryside of Checkenden, it must have been heaven in comparison." He added, "These people left their countries with nothing and they could never go back, because the home they knew didn't exist anymore. That is my passion, to try and keep the stories of these people alive. About 300 people gathered in the village on Saturday to celebrate the anniversary. Military vehicles drove onto the lawn with VIP guests, greeted by a guard of honour, including 100-year-old veteran Cheshwaf Bukachchi, or otherwise known as Mr. Black. Members of the British Army were also in attendance. Guests wore printed dresses and shawls, Union Jack t-shirts and traditional Polish costume as they gathered underneath bunting displaying British and Polish flags. Father Ryszard Maniak, a Polish priest, opened the event with a speech. Both the Polish and English national anthems were played before a 2-minute silence was held. Czesław Adamski, 70, lived in the Checkenden Cap until he was 4 years old and helped Mr. Drucker put the commemoration event together. His parents, Jan and Rosalia, arrived from an area of Poland that is part of present-day Ukraine after being displaced by the Soviet Union. Speaking to the gathered crowd, Mr. Adamczyk said, "From 1948 until 1961, these woods were transformed into Checkenden's Little Poland. It was a place where displaced soldiers and their families found sanctuary, raised their children, and preserved their culture after being exiled from their homeland. Today, we are here to ensure the sacrifices of our parents and ancestors are never forgotten. We see it in the continued bond between the British Army, the government of Poland, and our community, all of whom still carry the torch for freedom that our parents fought for." He told the Henley Standard, "We felt that the Black Horse was a great location to have our event as it was a drinking hole for Polish people in Checkenden. It was a short walk away from the camp and probably the closest introduction to a part of English life, the British pub. I certainly visited the pub on a number of occasions once I was old enough to be drinking, and members of the community will visit it because of its significance." Irinka Motyka lives in Sonning Common and said her parents travelled to the UK in 1947. Ms. Motyka lived in the Checkenden camp until she was about 5 before moving to the house that she still lives in now. She said, "When we arrived in Checkenden, I remember feeling quite intimidated by the woodland around me. People had spoken of the beautiful woods, but I felt a real sense of mystery, a sense of allure, possibly a degree of fear and concern. I was scared there were bears in those woods, and I had no knowledge of the world beyond them." She added, "It's amazing hearing the experiences of others because it's a consolidation of our identity. It's extraordinary that people have carried these memories, these thoughts and concerns, these sadnesses as well as the joys, and they can still remember them and feel an affinity with what was." Miranda Mills lives in Woodcote, having moved from Checkenden when she was about 25. She explained her father, Ryszard Habeszynski, who died in 1993, was a Polish soldier who settled at the Checkenden camp in 1948. She said he couldn't return to the town he lived in, Prozerowski, which is now part of Belarus because it was under communist rule. "He lived at the camp and he met my mum Anne, an English lady. The camp was a real community. They had their own shop as well as a school and a library, and they held dances and went to the cinema. They really integrated with the local people, and that's how my parents met each other." Marian Kekieck arrived at the Checkenden camp when he was 6 years old in September 1947. He lived there with his parents for about 13 years until 1960. Marion's father, Mir Chaswaf, served as a major in the Second Corps in the desert with General Montgomery's 8th Army. He said, "I visited the camp many times and I found where my Nissen hut stood, and I've also found my favourite oak tree, which was only about 30 yards from the hut, which is still standing there. Walking around, I can remember where everything is and what stood where, and I thought about 2 years ago that it would go completely and disappear, so I thought that there was no point visiting there anymore. But to have nearly 300 people turn up to a small village in Oxfordshire is amazing. We can try and imagine what these people went through and what they've suffered. They arrived in Checkendon and they finally had a roof over their heads and they formed a community." Well, I have to give sincere apologies at my attempts to say the Polish names, and also to say that this item, you might have guessed because I think I gave it away, came from the Henley Standard online.
And an article from the Henley Standard of the 29th of May. Farm shop bags first place in awards thanks to community support. A shop in Brightwell Salom has won a regional award. The farm shop of Turner's Green has been awarded first prize in the 19th annual South East Countryside Alliance Awards in the best local food or drink category. Julia Mearns, originally from Swincombe, moved to Brightwell Salom in 1993 and opened the farm shop with her husband John in 2008. The couple also run the Red Lion pub next door, which they bought in 2012. Mrs. Mearns said, "All the awards are nominated by and voted for by the public, so we were simply notified that we had been nominated for the South East area in about mid-February, which we were so grateful for, and then we found out we had won on Thursday, May the 7th, by an email. For the final national round, we had to complete a questionnaire about the shop, including what products we sell, information about our team and our community involvement. Then we'll go up against the shops in the other regions, including the Northeast, Northwest and the Midlands, and the national award will be announced at the reception in the House of Lords on Wednesday, July the 8th. Mrs. Mearns said there was only one voting round with the Alliance, Mrs. Mearns said there was only one voting round with the Alliance, then creating a shortlist of about 6 finalists for each region in March. Voting closed on April the 6th. She added that the shop asked customers to vote for them, and they were delighted to do so. She said, "When we found out we were first in the region, I couldn't believe it. We were so pleased, and it was brilliant because it was the same evening as our annual village meeting. I opened the email to see 'congratulations' written there. It was just incredible. Then I got to tell our parish that we had had great business news, which was fantastic, and we are just so honoured and thankful to have people who have voted for us." Mrs. Mearns said that the shop has received 2 green aprons and a certificate, which she has now framed to hang in the shop. She added, "We have entered competitions before. We competed as part of the Muddy Stilettos Best Farm Shop Deli Award last year in April, and we came second, which was really good. We were in the lead with the voting, and you could see it as it happened. We were leading until the very end, and then suddenly we were overtaken. With this, the voting has been very secretive, and I couldn't find out how we were getting on until the final result came through." She continued, "We are just delighted. Firstly, just to be nominated is an amazing achievement, and also to have received enough votes to win is amazing. We are so grateful to our customers, our locals, and our community. We are definitely a community here in Brightwell, so we are so pleased. Our village was delighted as well. All of our customers seem happy for us, and they're all congratulating us when they come in and say how much we deserve it, which is so lovely to hear." And there's a photograph of Mrs. Mearns with her apron and her certificate.
This next item is taken from Round and About, and it's entitled Growing Together. On June the 9th, Route 1 Garden Centre celebrates its 25th birthday. To mark the special anniversary, Jeremy, the owner, has chosen to use the occasion to give back to the community by funding a grand draw with a prize fund of £5,000, with all the proceeds going to a very deserving charity, Wild About Wallingford. Wild About Wallingford is a community-led charity established in 2020 that provides support for activities, projects and campaigns to improve green and blue spaces in Wallingford for the well-being of people and for wildlife. From small corners on the roadside to planting and maintaining community orchards and the nearby Mill Brook, their volunteers are improving the local area and getting people involved with wildlife, gardening and practical conservation, often working in partnership with local organisations and businesses. A previously overgrown piece of land owned by Oxfordshire County Council is one example, with some support from the council, who provided the rowan tree and a little green fingered magic. It becomes a picture of colour, not just pleasing to the eye for passers-by, but also helping local insect life and pollinators. The area received a thriving award in the Thames and Chilterns RHS Britain in Blooms, It's Your Neighbourhood category. The charity's mission aligns perfectly with Route 1's ethos, celebrating plants as the stars of the show and bringing joy through the colour and beauty they create in shared spaces. Tickets are £5, with the draw on the 9th of June at 4 p.m. Good luck.
And now for that what's increasingly becoming our regular item of What's On. And the first item mentioned is the Wallingford Thames Run, 10 km and 5 km, to be held on Sunday the 7th of June from 9 a.m. This is a fun-packed multi-terrain race. The 10 km and 5 km race take runners from the heart of Cromarsh along the banks of the stunning River Thames and through the historic town of Wallingford. Your race entry helps raise funds for both Cromarsh Gifford Primary School and Styleacre, a local charity that enhances the lives of Oxfordshire-based people with learning disabilities and autism. Take your pick from our Run Britain licensed 5K or 10K course. Both affiliated club members and unaffiliated runners are welcome, as I'm sure are and will be spectators. Saturday, June the 6th, Divorced, Beheaded, Died, an audience with King Henry VIII. Step into the 16th century for a dramatic solo performance about the infamous Tudor King. The year is 1544 and King Henry VIII of that name is engaged upon royal progress about his realm and has halted here in Wallingford to afford his loyal subjects the opportunity to have audience with their sovereign lord and king. The king, recently married to his new and sixth wife, Queen Catherine Parr, is in poor health. His leg continues to cause him considerable pain and he is often in a poor humour. In the course of the audience, His Majesty will recount the events of his long reign, telling of his wives and his children, and His Majesty will invite his loyal subjects to petition him or question him on any related subject. There may be some surprising answers. A lively Q&A is assured. This is a show in two acts to be held at St Peter's Church, Thames Street, Wallingford. Time, 7 p.m. Cost, adult £15. Child 12 to 18, £10. And it does state there's an age guidance of 12 plus, as there may be some moderate swearing and mention of adult themes. For tickets, visit www.visitchurches.org. Sunday, June the 7th, Wallingford Town Council Band Concert. Relax listening to an open-air performance at the Castle Gardens. This Sunday, 2 to 3pm, free of charge, entry from Bear Lane. This Sunday's concert will be given by the Wally Ukes, Wallingford's very own ukulele group. Also, the same date, Sunday, the Langtree Sinfonia Summer Concert features a classical programme at Dorchester Abbey. The performance runs from 7pm to 9pm and the evening will feature performances of the Pirates of Penzance Overture, Parry's Symphony No. 3 and Elgar's Cello Concerto in E minor featuring celebrated cello artist Ellen Baumring Gledhill. Tickets are available for purchase via Langtree Sinfonia by telephone on 0795 171 2611, on the door on the day of the concert, or Ticket Source, and ticket prices are adult £15, a friend £14, student £7.50, under £16 free. Or you can also look for details on the Skiddle event page. Looking a bit further ahead, Stoke Row Steam Rally 2026 is to be held on the 13th and 14th of June and it's at Hillbottom, Whitchurch Hill, RG8 7PU. This is a fantastic family couple of days out with steam engines, tractors, cars, trucks, military vehicles, motorcycles, ring events, traditional fair rides, craft tent, trade stalls, food and bars, with a family area and public camping. And there will also be live music on Friday and Saturday nights. Visit the Stoke Row Steam Rally website or their Facebook page for more details and purchase of tickets. On Sunday, June the 14th, we have the Walled Gardens of Wallingford to be held between 1 and 5:30pm on the 14th, as mentioned. This year's event features 17 private walled gardens opening their gates to the public. This year includes 3 new gardens, alongside others not opened in 2025, offering visitors the chance to explore hidden spaces rarely seen. From peaceful corners and historic walls to colourful planting and carefully tended landscapes, the event provides a unique glimpse into some of Wallingford's most charming private gardens. A relaxed and enjoyable way to spend a summer afternoon while supporting local charities and discovering a hidden side of Wallingford. Many of the gardens are small, so you can easily see all the gardens on the day. You can dally with a glass of wine or Pimm's or a cup of tea and a cake and take a relaxing trip on the river. Several gardens have stalls for you to browse and enjoy. The Wallingford Morris Dancers will be visiting a number of gardens. Locations will be made available nearer the time. A guided tour of St Leonard's Church is available with a wildlife tour in the churchyard. St Peter's Church and its churchyard are also open. We are sorry, but only assistance dogs are permitted. The next item, read by Kate, was actually produced for the monthly magazine, and it is about another What's On event, the Open Gardens at Ewelme.
Once again, a varied selection of beautiful gardens will open this year in Ewelme from 2 to 5pm on the 14th of June. Included will be some gardens backing on to the watercress beds, as well as the Pottery, Chantry House and Hill House. Also open will be the allotments and gardens at the Cloisters, as well as the allotments at Suffolk House.
Teas with homemade cakes will be served at the Watercress Centre and the Ewelm Village store. Entrance to the gardens is £5 per person. Accompanied children are free. Parking will be available. Tickets and maps will be available from any participating garden, and proceeds will go to support Ewelm Village Show on August Bank Holiday Monday.
That item brings us to the end of this week's recording of the Wallingford and District Talking newspaper. And as always, hoping you keep well until next week when we return, it's
goodbye.